With the release of the latest Indiana Jones movie, you might be considering a career change to archaeology. Who would want to travel to exotic places and save treasures from the grip of evil? Well, you'll probably not be surprised to learn that a great deal of the real job involves carefully sifting prehistorical mounds for tiny shards of pottery in some place that may be exotic, but is almost certainly uncomfortable. Every once in a while, though, something spectacular does turn up. Fred Hebert knows about both. He's currently an archaeology fellow with the National Geographic Society and curator of the new exhibition of the Lost Treasures of Afghanistan at the National Gallery. So, archaeologists, call and tell us what your jobs are really like. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Fred Hebert joins us now on the line from Philadelphia. Fred, nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk with you.
And battling Nazis, climbing out of snake pits, donning a fedora, all in a day's work, right?
Well, it's a little more banal than that. It's more like battling with visa officers and getting paperwork and raising funds that we do. That's what the real job of archaeologists is all about.
Raising funds?
Oh, my goodness. It's a very expensive operation. You've got to imagine that if we're going to take a crew of people, including graduate students and assistants and fancy photographers abroad, it costs a pretty penny.
Now, I was on a dig with you on a National Geographic Radio expedition near the town of Sinope in Turkey on the Black Sea coast, and you were finding some remarkable things at a mound that, well, it may have been where trading was first invented.
Absolutely. We were sitting on the edge of the Black Sea looking at artifacts that came from far and wide, all across the Silk Road. The Silk Road is a metaphor for trade that was all across Asia, sort of a whole bunch of trading posts going from China all the way to Rome. And a lot of those artifacts ended up right on the edge of the Black Sea, ready for sea trade on the way to the Mediterranean.
But I don't think any of them was made of gold, Fred.
Well, we didn't. In fact, most of archaeology is not looking for gold. It's looking for those little pieces of debris that people have left behind. It's almost a study of garbageology.
Yeah, chicken bones, that would be a great find.
Chicken bones would be fabulous. If we found chicken bones on the edge of the Black Sea, we would be in heaven.
And this is this took, I'm willing to bet, the better part of a year, various things, for all of that to come together.
We're really excited about the current exhibition in Washington, D.C. We really do have what we call them hidden treasures from Afghanistan, an exhibition of finds that were in transit along the Silk Road, and the brave Afghans saved them, and they're on view for us to see in Washington, D.C. right now.
And this is another story. This is a story of curators and brave people and the archaeological objects that they saved, beginning from the Soviet invasion, back in 1979.
Absolutely. It sort of parallels the Indiana Jones film theme. We've got Soviets, we've got spies, we've got intrigue, we've got French and German and American archaeologists and Soviet archaeologists all vying for the same mounds. It almost makes a real archaeologist think that Indiana Jones was real.
Now, these curators at this museum in Kabul, you think that they squirreled this stuff away and, well, just hid it. There's more to the story than that. This was through the Soviet invasion. This was through the civil wars of Afghanistan that lasted for 10 years and then the regime of the Taliban.
Yeah, actually, it's a group of people I call the Afghan heroes. If you can imagine, in a very difficult situation that Afghanistan was in for almost 25 years, war and terror and religious fanatics coming in, always asking, grabbing their coats and saying, listen, where's the gold? Where's the gold? And they just had this code of silence that they used to say, well, we don't know where it is, and, you know, tough luck, guys. And so, in fact, the treasures of Afghanistan were saved. They were saved by the Afghans themselves. So in 2003, when we first found out about this, it was an amazing revelation to find out that these treasures were saved.
Oh, they'd thought that they were long lost.
We all did. Everybody did. All the scholars, all the archaeologists, all the historians who had been involved in this, we all thought they were lost. It was just this small group of heroes who kept their mouths shut.
And as everybody knows, if there's a conspiracy of more than one, that's one too many. That's an astonishing number of people who didn't talk all that time.
Isn't that amazing? It's a story that's really important, not only for the Afghans, but for the whole world to know that people really care about their culture take care of things. I think that's a great lesson, and I hope people who see Indiana Jones will look at the people in the countries where they're working and realize they've got a big job.
We're talking with Fred Hebert, who's an archaeological fellow at the National Geographic Society, also the exhibition curator of the hidden treasures from the National Museum at Kabul, which is currently at the National Gallery here in Washington, D.C., and later goes on tour around the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, archaeologists, tell us what your job is really like. 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And let's begin with Mike. And Mike's on the line with us from Santa Rosa in California.
Hi, how you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Yeah, you know, I work actually a lot with construction jobs out here, and I work a lot with kids. Work a lot with local Native American tribes, a lot of the interested public. I work a lot with students. There's a whole cross-section of us that does cultural resources management.
And what do you actually do?
Well, whenever they go in and do a big development job, they're going to build a freeway, putting in a subdivision, anything like that. The archaeology is part of the environmental regulatory process.
To make sure that there's not some treasure, you know, when I'm talking about treasure, again, it could be chicken bones buried there.
Yeah, hey, I'm happy to get chicken bones, too. It doesn't preserve too well out here, so absolutely. Yeah, anything, any indication of people being there, we usually have to make an argument about whether it's important or not, and that's a lot of what we do.
And, Mike, have you seen the movie?
You know, I haven't, but I belong to that generation of archaeologists that did get into it because of Indiana Jones.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's funny, actually. Some of the new grad students, they've never seen any of the movies.
Oh.
I have no idea how they got into it. But, yeah, I owe Harrison Ford a job.
Well, I think he's doing okay. So probably 10% of your salary won't make that much of a difference.
Absolutely.
Mike, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Fred Hebert, he mentioned, where people are digging for developments and stuff. This is a huge deal if you're digging someplace like Rome or Jerusalem.
It's absolutely a big deal anywhere around the world. One of the things that's really exciting about archaeology is that there's history under everybody's feet. You could be in Philadelphia, you could be in California, you could be in Greece or Rome or Afghanistan, and every place you are, you're actually walking on the heritage of this great world that we have. It's really exciting to think that we are inheriting this great treasure trove of history behind us, and archaeologists can find it.
Let's get Chris on the line, Chris is with us from Vermilion in Ohio.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Yes, we run an organization, the Great Lakes Historical Society, and one of the things we do is to send divers down with an archaeologist to map shipwrecks on the bottom of Lake Erie. And one of the reasons we do it is because it provides the state with a legal record of what is on the bottom of the lake so that in the event that treasure hunters do go to these shipwrecks, they will have a more difficult time selling their artifacts on eBay, for example, because a legal record has been established so that we know what's down there. So there are still these treasure hunters out there. And in the world of archaeology, I think they're also known as bad guys, not good guys.
And what kinds of wrecks are there at the bottom of Lake Erie?
In Lake Erie, there's over 2,200 shipwrecks. In Ohio waters, about 650. And they range from 18th century schooners all the way up to one that we're looking for right now, which is a 350-foot steel railroad car ferry, which was lost in 1909. All hands died, and it left Conneaut, Ohio, and was never seen again, the Marquette Bessemer No. 2. And it's supposed to have gold in its safe, but we realize that that's probably more legend than fact.
Legends sometimes, though, come true. What's the most interesting thing you've found, Chris?
Well, we actually just discovered last year the General Anthony Wayne, which was an 1835 steamboat which exploded in Lake Erie from a boiler explosion and sank. And it was thought to be a boat that would have carried gold from the Buffalo to Toledo on its way out west, but it was on its way back east when it exploded. And it doesn't have gold on it, but it has engine parts from a steam engine that there's no plans for those engines anymore. So it provides us with a knowledge of how steam engines were made in the 1830s, because they don't exist anymore in real life. So, archaeology is often about finding historical answers as opposed to finding gold.
And, of course, one thing we already knew is they didn't make the boilers thick enough.
That's right, and they ran them too fast.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Chris.
Thank you so much.
Underwater archaeology, Fred Hebert, that's a big and, well, there's a huge, huge amount of work to be done.
There is a huge amount of work to be done. It's both on land and in sea. You have to understand that we've just scratched the surface of our own human history. If you think about what we know about our past and what exists out there on land and under the sea, you've got to understand about 95% of our history is still hidden there, waiting for us to learn about. The ocean is perhaps one of the greatest museums of human history. It's just waiting there. Shipwrecks and submerged sites, it's all exciting. We really have a tremendous future for archaeology.
We're talking with Fred Hebert of the National Geographic Society and also the exhibition curator of Afghanistan Hidden Treasures from the National Museum, Kabul, currently at the National Gallery. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's talk with Rebecca. Rebecca's with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi, good afternoon.
Afternoon.
I had a comment in the same vein as the previous caller did from Ohio. I just saw the Indiana Jones movie last night, and it was a great time. I encourage everyone to go out and see it. And one of the statements that he makes in that movie towards the end, when they discover what this mysterious civilization is and what they were doing all those thousands of years ago, is that they were accumulating knowledge. And he has this line that really resonated with me. He said, knowledge was their treasure. And I've excavated in Greece and in Israel, and at the site in Israel called Tel Dor, we were looking to date this ginormous building. And what it all came down to was, just a few tiny little sherds of Hellenistic pottery that were in the foundation trench. And while during that season we had, some other, artistic pieces and, some precious metals, the stereotypical treasure, really it was the pottery that made the season and made it all worthwhile. And I'll take any responses off the air.
Okay, Rebecca, thanks for the movie review and thanks for the call. Yes, tiny little things buried somewhere, seemingly inconsequential, stuff that people building the building threw away, Fred Hebert, turns out to be a really important clue for an archaeologist in the 21st century.
Absolutely. It's amazing what archaeologists can reconstruct from these tiny little fragments. I remember once on a dig in Turkmenistan that we were digging and digging and digging, and finally we found a tiny little stamp seal, a stamp seal with four or five little signs inscribed on them. And from that, we determined that perhaps there was connections with Mesopotamia and India, maybe with even China. It was really quite a remarkable find. It's something that needs to be followed up with further finds. My professor said, well, good luck, Fred. You've got to find 100 more like this. But that's the archaeologist's job, right? We've got to take these tiny little fragments and turn them into history.
You don't think you're talking about the Silk Road, which, of course, very broadly went from China all the way on the land route across Asia to the Black Sea and to the ports on the Mediterranean. You don't think of it going through Afghanistan.
It's really quite astonishing. If you think about the location of Afghanistan, it's landlocked, it's got all these mountains. But those valleys that go through the mountains were the conduit for trade, both east and west and north and south. When you look at the ancient cultures of Afghanistan, it was important for early religions, early trade, early science. It's really one of the hearths of civilizations that's interconnected with all of our lives.
And when you get one of those aha moments, what's it like?
Oh, my goodness, it's just incredible. If you find something that connects you with Rome or with China or with India, and you look at one of these artifacts, as you can actually at the exhibition in Washington, D.C., you look at it and you say, I can see my own connections with that artifact and realize that it was found in Afghanistan and it's some thousands and thousands of years old. It gives us a new perspective on who we are and how interconnected the world is.
Let's talk with Derek. Derek with us from Prescott, Arizona.
Hi.
Hi, Derek. Derek?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yeah, my name's Derek, and I was kind of following up with a comment someone was talking about cultural resource management. The people who go and do the archaeology for developments and roads and pipelines and power lines and things like that.
Yeah.
And I'm one of the people that they call shovel bums. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek phrase for us. We just have bachelor's degrees, and we're kind of natural gypsies at heart, and we basically go all over the country and work for per diem. Per diem is when a company needs you. You know, you might be in the middle of Nevada, and there's a big pipeline development that's going on. Well, they don't have people who have the degree and the knowledge, so they pay per diem, which is like hotel, housing, and some food stipends. And I know a lot of people who do this, but only a very few amount of people who do it all the time and who have dedicated part of their lives to it. And you basically live on the road, live out of your car, always looking for that new job that's in maybe a state or a place that you've never been before, and going there and living out of hotels and just doing something that you love.
You're the extra in the Indiana Jones movie.
Kind of, yeah, we really are. We're kind of, you know, it's, you know, in some of those older scenes, you know, when you see all the workers laboring in the hot sun and they have the robes on and the turbans, that's kind of us. but there's really not too many of it. Most people do it only for about a year, and then they realize that it's a very hard lifestyle, and, you know, you really can't have much of a life outside of your work. But if your work is your life, and if it is something that you love to do, you know, the only thing that's you know, it's stopping you is just, you know, running out of places to go and running out of different states. I've worked in 2 years, I've worked in 13 different states.
Wow. Derek, thanks very much for the call and for introducing us to the concept of the shovel bum.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
No problem.
And Fred Hebert, well, no shovel bum he. Thanks very much for being with us today, Fred.
It's a pleasure. It's a great movie and a great exhibition in Washington, D.C., and thank you so much.
Fred Hebert, archaeology fellow with the National Geographic Society and exhibition curator for Afghanistan, Hidden Treasures from the National Museum, Kabul, now at the National Gallery, with us by phone from Philadelphia. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.